The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
If you are passionate about food and how it supports well-being and health, learn more. The Institute for Optimum Nutrition has been training nutritional therapists for 35 years on its highly acclaimed and accredited diploma courses. Start your new career in nutritional therapy, one that will make a difference and help others achieve their health goals. Train with the home of nutritional therapy education. Find us online and give us a call or click on the IOM banner on the UK Health Radio homepage.
Recovery Today on UKHealthRadio.com. Join me and my guests on this voyage of recovery and discovery.
Hello everyone. Hi, I'm Jim Smith and welcome to Recovery Today. Well, this week's show is, well, in a way it's a family affair because the show that preceded this, I interviewed Les Davidson. And some of you will have heard that or will hear it. And today I'm interviewing Tom Davidson. And Tom is Les's son. Is that right, Tom?
That's right, Jim. Hiya.
So it's a great, it really gives me great pleasure because I've, I mean, so far my guests, you know, I have known them all. However, with Tom, you know, I've not only known him, I've seen him, you know, when he was using. I've seen him in a difficult place, and I've seen you come through, haven't I? And yeah. I know you now, and that's, what is that? How many years?
So, well, we've probably known each other over 10 years, I'd say, maybe even longer than that.
Yeah.
Because of your friendship of Les, and when me and Les used to run the studio in Hoxton together, you came down, and I was still in my... I was still using them.
Yeah, you were.
And I think you, I don't think, you definitely kind of planted some seeds for recovery with me early on.
That's good.
You know, in a very non, in a very subtle way.
Yeah.
You know, you were always there in support. It was great.
Well, that's good to hear. Yeah, that is good to hear. So, yeah, well, how long has it been now since you've been in recovery?
So, just over 6 years in recovery.
Yeah,
one day at a time.
That's
Jim.
Right.
Yeah,
one day at a time. It's funny, I went to the Nelson Trust yesterday and did my session. There were about 50 people there, you know, newcomers, you know, people in treatment. And, you know, I just introduced myself and... You know, somebody said, how long have you been? I said, 42 years. And then I said, look, there's a question for you. How do you think I've done that? And there was a pause. And then somebody shouted out, one day at a time. And
I said, brilliant.
Exactly. Yeah.
It is one day at a time, isn't it, Jim?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
So, Tom, let's start with beginnings. You grew up in North London, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah. Crouch End in North London.
Mm.
And I was born in the Whittington Hospital in Archway, which is in North London. It's a big state-run hospital in North London. My parents moved down from Scotland in the early 70s with my brother, who was born in Scotland.
Mm.
And I remember the first house we lived in was in Crouch End in Nelson Road.
Mm.
Yeah, fond memories, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. Are they fond memories?
Absolutely. Yeah, growing up was great. I was born in 1976, so you know it was late 70s, early 80s. I can remember really fond memories of growing up in that community, and it was a very diverse community back then. Lots of different cultures living on our street, and it was the era of going out to play, which you don't really have so much nowadays.
That's right.
You know, as young children, we would go out and play on the street, or we would meet in someone's back garden because all the back gardens were connected. And there was just great adventure and discovery in groups of children.
Sure,
you know, and it wasn't kind of contrived by going to groups and after school clubs.
No,
it was we'd just go out and play. And it's, I've got very fond memories of that time.
Yeah, of course.
Saying that, from a loving family, but I do remember, I think, a lot of parties when I was growing up, because both my parents used when I was growing up, and I was around that. It wasn't hidden from me.
No, no.
And it wasn't necessarily promoted, but it wasn't necessarily shunned upon using, you know? So drinking alcohol and taking certain types of drugs wasn't hidden from me.
No, no.
And so I think I kind of built up a bit of a... kind of not resilience, what's the word? I built up a bit of a tolerance to thinking that was okay, maybe, Jim, that was normal behavior.
That's right.
But now I look back and I talk to my parents and we're all in agreement that it wasn't normal behavior, you know, but that's kind of using, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I kind of just going back to your previous point, I identify with that a great deal because, you know, 20 years, but well, I grew up in the 50s, you know, two decades before, but I suppose even more so, you know, we used to go out. It was quite incredible when I look back, the kind of freedom we were allowed.
Yeah.
As small children, you know, used to go miles away and on our own. And
Yeah. It's fantastic. There's actually a local park called Stationers Park in Crouch End that used to be a boys' school, secondary school, called Stationers School.
Yeah.
But it closed down in the early 80s, and it was just a derelict, couple of derelict buildings, but a really large landmass on a hill.
Mm.
And we just used to go over there on a Saturday morning, and there'd be like 50, 60 kids over there on a Saturday morning, all on your BMXs or on your skateboards.
That's
and such a great time. But and that freedom, the word freedom you use there, Jim, I do remember that freedom as a child, you know, which
that's
is
fantastic. Times have changed considerably, haven't they?
Absolutely.
Anyway, you grew up Crouch End and in a family. Well, your dad's a professional musician, so you grew up in and around music. That must have been really interesting.
Yeah, that was. I mean, I'm really, really lucky with kind of a musical education that came from both my father, as you say, being a professional musician, but my mother as well, and just being surrounded by music.
Yeah.
My father practicing and playing, us luckily going to gigs at early ages, gigs that my dad was playing at, gigs that we wanted to go to. I mean, I remember, I don't remember, but I've been told the first gig I went to was Muddy Waters at Ali Pally when I was about 3 or 4 years old.
Well, Les spoke about that. That was his last selection of music on the show. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
You know, so it was kind of, it was seeping into me from an early age, and there was always music in the family home.
Yeah.
And good music as well, you know, really, really great music. But another thing I remember was when Les went away, because Les went abroad a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two things there, something I want to touch on. I don't want to go off track too much, but Les being away a lot did have an effect on me.
Yeah, of course.
And I want to kind of just throw that in because it's relevant to my upbringing. Kind of my childhood, and because he was out providing for the family, he was away a lot on tour. But what would happen is he'd bring back all these new forms of music from America.
So
I remember in the mid-80s, mid-80s, he brought back bands like the Beastie Boys and Run DMC and all this stuff on cassette that we just didn't have in the UK.
That's right.
And I remember he had this little Sony Walkman. It was one of the first Sony Walkmans.
Yes, I do.
And
well,
he used to allow me to take it to infant school. So I was like 7 or 8 years old.
That was a big thing.
And we had like the Beastie Boys album, you know, and I'd go in with this Walkman and with all my friends, we'd listen to this music on this. And it was just great, you know, being access to music at such an early age.
That's right.
When technology wasn't as it is now, you know.
Yeah, that's right,
And, just growing up on lots of different types of music.
From
jazz to rock, classical music.
Mm.
And then my own kind of foray into, like I was talking about, being introduced to hip-hop in the mid-80s, but the whole kind of electronic late 80s music thing with people like Jan Hammer, Paul Hardcastle, you know, records like Paul Hardcastle's 19. That was the first record I bought, which is electronic music.
Of course.
And so my love of electronic music was nurtured then as well in the mid to late 80s. So I was very lucky, actually.
Yes. Well, look, before we play your first selection of music, I'd like to just ask you, when you first took alcohol or other substances, is that a memorable experience?
There is a vague memory of being given a taste of a glass of wine when I was very young, eight or nine, at a party.
Yeah.
And I do have a kind of slightly distorted memory of being, you know, as children, because we used to go to these parties back in the 80s and all the kids would go into a room and bottles of Coke and videos and we would hang out and it was great. Again, there was lots of discovery and freedom there. But all the adults would be off partying.
Yes.
And I think one of my, maybe my brother and one of the older friends went and got a glass of wine and we all had a sip. And I remember, you know, recoiling from the taste of it and the strength of it and just thinking, oh, you know. But I think my first actual memory of taking a drink or a drug was, would have been smoking at about 13 years old.
Yeah. Yeah, so your parents, they split up, didn't they, Tom?
Yeah, they split up when I was about 12 or 13 and had quite a, had a big effect on me.
Yes,
and, you know, I started bunking off school and going hanging out in Stationers Park, which I've talked about before, with older teenagers, with older kids.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, that was part of my introduction to alcohol and drugs.
Mm.
And as I said before, not feeling part of, I think I was looking to belong to a group.
Sure.
And the group of young teenagers that I found in my local area, I think was misguided, but I thought I belonged to that group. I sort of later discovered that I didn't. But yeah, that were, those were my early experiences with using.
Okay, well, let's play your first selection and say briefly, this is Marlena Shaw, isn't it, with Californian Soul.
Absolutely, yeah. It's such a great record to me. And for the reason I picked this record is because every time I hear it, it's so uplifting and positive. It's such a positive record. And, you know, California Soul, it just kind of takes me to sunny, you know, a sunny kind of seaside area, not necessarily California, no, but it's just so uplifting and it's such a great record. And the history of it's really interesting. I mean, it's a funk and soul tune written by Ashford and Simpson.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was issued originally as the B-side of a Messengers single, Window Shopping, in 1967 under one of the Motown group of record labels.
Yeah.
Ashford and Simpson wrote it, and later Nick Ashford actually released his own version in 1968 on Verve Records.
Okay.
And it was then issued as a single by American pop quintet, The Fifth Dimension, in late 68.
Mm.
And then also covered by Motown vocal duo Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell. And then later by Marlena Shaw, which is, to me, far, far the best version.
Okay. Well, here she comes, Marlena Shaw, with Californian Soul.
Lingers in your ear, but you can't forget from sundown to sunset. Now, now, it's all in the air, you hear it everywhere. No matter what you do, it's gonna grab a hold on you. California soul, California soul. You see the sun up every morning, and if you
'cause it's really such a groove now. What's a brand new kind of thinking in your mind, and you can't go wrong 'cause you're grooving all day long.
Well, that was Marlena Shaw with California Soul. Yeah, it's a great track, Tom. So, yeah, difficult time for you. You know, well, the separation of parents is difficult for any child, and it impacts on them in different ways. However, with you, it's accelerated your drinking and using. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, the fallout of the family splitting up was never really dealt with at that time. Professionally, I didn't see any health professionals or go to counselling. And, you know, my using accelerated because that's kind of what I'd found as a comfort. I had to deal with a pain I didn't really understand at that age. And that went on for a couple of years, and my behaviour took a really bad turn, and I got involved in crime, and my using got quite heavy for a boy of that age, taking psychedelic drugs and amphetamines and smoking marijuana daily and drinking daily, and you know, it wasn't a good play. I'm not going to school, bunking off, and stealing as well. So the behaviours were at a very early age.
Yeah,
it took a really bad turn.
So how did this change, if it did change?
Well, on the surface, it changed through my parents deciding that, you know, the best thing for me was to be taken out of the situation. So my father suggested that I went away on tour with a band that he was playing with around Europe. We're doing a UK and European tour. So I ended up going on at the age of 15, just 15 turning 16, going away with a band. And
that's quite something, isn't
it? It is quite something, and it did seem to work. What it did do was it showed me a bit of the world. It took me out of the bubble where I was in. It took me away from people I was associating with who, you know, it was a two-way thing. We weren't good for each other, these people. We were, you know, as a group, we needed to be disbanded.
Sure, of course. Yeah.
And by me being taken out, that allowed me to see another side of life and maybe see the error of my ways, maybe, and to have a bit of a fresh start.
So how long did the tour last?
It's a couple of months.
Yeah,
we went all around Germany and a couple of dates in France, Switzerland, Amsterdam, Holland, UK dates. So it was great. It was a brilliant experience. And what it did do for me, and I always had an interest in, because I'm not a musician, Jim, although I'm from a musical family.
Yeah.
I don't play an instrument.
Yeah.
But I, from a very early age, had a real keen interest in sound engineering and the technical side of music business and music production. And by going on tour, I was kind of shown that side, shadowing the sound engineers, helping set up equipment on stage. And it kind of really planted a seed for me with that kind of love of technical side of making music.
Yeah, that's right. At this point in the show, I think I need to tell the listeners that Tom is the producer. He's my producer for this show. So, you know, that's really good. And also, Tom produced an album that I made a couple of years ago, and I've seen him work in different environments, and you know, he's a very fine producer, recording engineer, and so there we are. So let's get back to where we were, where you were. Yeah. So what happened after that? You came back from the tour.
Back from the tour, and then it was a kind of, you know, I was a lot clearer. I was still using, but you know, I was a lot clearer with regards to having a bit of an idea of where I wanted to go in my life, and I started doing a BTEC course at University of Westminster in sound engineering.
Mm.
And I was about, so this was about the age of 16, and I was about 3 months into the course, and the course required you to do like a work placement one day a week at a recording studio.
Yeah.
So obviously having contacts in the industry, put the feelers out.
Yeah.
And my uncle landed me an interview at a studio called Conch Studios in Crouch End, which was Ray Davis's place. I think it still is Ray Davis's place.
Yes. Yeah.
Fantastic studio. So I went along there and I said, look, you know, I'm kind of, you know, I was lucky enough to actually see someone. And I met Sarah, the studio manageress down there, and it was all very kind of rock and roll and, you know, big desk, and I was sitting there thinking, you know, anyway, my first kind of job interview, and I said, look, I'm here to, I'm trying to get a day's work experience a week. And she said, well, look, we can't offer you that, but we could offer you a full-time job, but you'd have to stop going to college because we'd need you here all the time. Cut a long story short, I took the plunge and, decided not to continue in education. And I took the job as a, initially as a runner, you know, go to the shop guy and make tea and coffee and progress to assistant sound engineer. And learned a lot in that studio.
You must have done.
But also on the other side of things, again, I was in an environment, Jim, that using was acceptable.
Sure.
And it was a daily occurrence. It wasn't at the end of the day when we'd finish work.
No.
It was first thing in the morning, you know, and, and musicians were coming in, bands and record producers and engineers. Not everyone.
No.
But a vast majority of us.
Sure.
We were using regularly, daily, openly at work. So, that's, you know, my, on the surfaces of it, Tom's kind of, Tom sorted himself out. He's got a job in a studio. He's got direction. And, but what was also happening was I was nurturing my addiction and kind of allowing that to flourish as well.
That's right.
And again, suppressing feelings and issues that I hadn't dealt with growing up.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, so Conch Studios, full-time job, getting lots of experience in the recording industry, you know, as an engineer, as a producer. However, the using was spiraling. Well, where did it go? Where did your using take you?
Yeah, it took me to a, it took me to a place of desperation, Jim. You know, and it took a while. You know, so 18 working at Conch and then progressing into the music industry and working at various studios and progressing as a sound engineer and then eventually having my own recording studios and I got a record deal and I was releasing records and, you know, on the surface of it, it all seemed great, but my life was pretty unmanageable. You know, relationships were unmanageable. Just life skills, paying bills, you know, all that kind of stuff is very unmanageable. But I used to dress it up as, oh, I'm rock and roll. You know, I'm on the outside. When what it was my life was a mess. You know, and it progressed over about 10 years and I hit the age of 30. And for me, a kind of pivotal moment in my using, was when I discovered heroin. And I thought, this was it. This is the drug. This is the answer. It cures all evils for me, you know. But the house of cards started falling apart from that point on, and my life got progressively more unmanageable. And my using became more destructive, you know, to myself and people around me. And it just got to the point where I'd had enough. I was living a double life, you know. people knew I used certain types of drugs but didn't know that I used heroin. So I was living a lie. I was living a double life. Yeah, I was supporting my heroin addiction, but I was going to work every day and working in recording studios. And
with your dad at some point?
With my father, yeah.
And
we ran
and he was in his own recovery.
Together.
So he was observing this. And
and you as well. And you were around.
Yes,
and you
I was around. And
people were mentioning, hang on, Tom's not 100%.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
There was a bit of a joke that, you know, if I needed to go off and score,
yes.
it's like an extended break.
It
and
was,
my
I
excuse
remember.
Was I've got to go to the bank.
That's it.
You, and I would leave the studio, clients and all, for 20 minutes, half an hour, or I would go off and... I mean, that's just one example, and that's a very tame example of the stuff I do, and I don't need to get into the the ins and outs of my behaviour, but it was very destructive, it was very selfish.
That's right.
But the lie was such a burden. Living that double life was such a huge burden.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it got to a point where I just couldn't... I came to a junction, and my an ex-partner of mine, you know... lovely woman who, you know, just in the end had enough of my using.
Yeah.
She discovered that I was using heroin. And I'd been lying about my use to her, which was, you know, terrible behavior. By her asking me to leave and us splitting up, it was kind of left me at a junction where I was like, okay, I have to do something about this. So I went to see my GP. Confessed that I was using heroin and I was addicted and my behaviour and they got me into local services.
You know, I remember.
I met a care manager in in Southwark and you know, I got funding and I got to luckily I got to go to treatment, which was the best thing that could have happened to me. I needed to be taken out of my situation. Again, you know, going back 15 years prior to that, I needed to be taken out of my situation. And my father helped, and my mother helped with that by going on tour. The same thing happened 15 years later. I needed to be removed from my situation because I was at a junction. And if I hadn't, if, you know, recovery hadn't chosen me or I hadn't decided to make a change, who knows where I would have been, Jim.
Exactly.
You know, I was, I was technically homeless.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have any money.
Yeah.
You know, and I was just in a place of desperation and the gift of desperation. You hear people talking about the gift of desperation.
That's it. Yeah.
And it was a gift because it was
a
like,
gift,
okay,
yeah.
it was
yeah.
like a sign.
Sure.
Do something about this now while you've got a chance.
Yeah.
And I got into treatment and my life changed.
Yeah, so I know that. And, you know, you were taken out before on the tour for 2 months, but this is not a tour, is it? This is a journey.
A journey,
and it's not for 2 months, it's for the rest of your life, one day at a time.
Yeah.
Which is, it's so appropriate that you've chosen this track by Olive. And I didn't know, I mean, I've heard this track because it's being used by a well-known bank for a television commercial. But it's a great sentiment, lovely lyrics, and it's by Olive, isn't it? And it's called...
You're Not Alone.
In a way, it's all a matter of time. I will not worry for you, you'll be just fine. Take my thoughts with you, and when you look behind, you will surely see a face that you recognize. Alone. I'll wait till the end of time. Open your mind. Surely it's plain to see. You're not alone. I'll wait till the end of time for you. Open your mind. Surely there's time to be with me. Distance that makes life a little hard.
Well, that was Olive, You're Not Alone. I'm sure a lot of you out there will recognise that song. Where did you first hear it, Tom?
I heard it in the mid-90s. Mm. And, you know, it's so difficult when people... We've done a radio show before and,
yes.
You know, you're asked to pick songs. Because for me, you know, I love music and there's so much music out there.
Yeah.
I find it quite difficult to pick like a top five.
But
I thought this record is kind of twofold.
Mm.
The message in the lyric, You're Not Alone,
yeah.
I thought was really relevant to... Yeah. Recovery, and you aren't alone in recovery.
No,
you're never alone, you know, that's in a fellowship. That's the kind of big part of recovery and going to meetings and all the rest of it. You're not alone. You don't need to be alone anymore.
We don't. No.
And we are very alone in our using.
You
know, that's right. I experienced that.
Mm.
And it's just a great record that it's bittersweet for me.
Mm.
I hear those opening...
Yeah.
synthesizer chords, and it takes me, it's bittersweet. It reminds me of my using, but it also reminds me that I don't live that life anymore, which is fantastic. And also it's a dance record, and that's really important for my love of electronic music and dance music. And as a sound engineer and a producer, I've had heavy involvement in making a lot of dance records, drum and bass, hip-hop, that kind of urban stuff that, you know, my generation and just before my generation, you know, children of the 70s and before, we grew up, you know, I grew up in club culture in London.
You did,
and rave culture in London.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's got so big nowadays, it's commercialised. It's huge now. But that mid-90s time, I was working in Soho, at a recording studio in Soho.
Yeah.
And it was a magical time, actually, you know, musically.
Yeah, of course, yeah. So you... How long were you in treatment? And you did a follow-on, an aftercare, second stage, was that right?
Yeah, I did. I went to a fantastic treatment centre.
You can mention it.
Yeah, yeah. ODAT. Yeah. ODAT in Streatham. Yeah. One day at a time.
That's right.
A fantastic peer-led rehab.
Mm.
So, the lunatics running the asylum was definitely the kind of... The way we lived, because we lived together in a house. Yeah, patients, we're not patients, I suppose. What would
clients,
you,
residents.
Residents. Yeah, so yeah, it's an all male treatment. And I went to look at other treatment centres, and I remember going along to like an open day at ODAT in Streatham, and one of an addict there who'd been through ODAT, who was in recovery, said, you know, welcome. It was that, you're not alone. Yeah. Welcome. Yeah. Come in and join us.
Yes.
And I just felt part of, you know, it was going back to that feeling part of, and I felt kind of safe with these people, and I had an affinity with them.
That's right.
And I did 3 months in first stage residential treatment.
Yeah.
And we lived together, no staff in the house. You know,
we lived
as a unit, and we cooked, and we learned life skills, and we went to groups every day. And, you know, it was actually quite a beautiful time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, time of not a lot of responsibility. No, I know. And
you were young. How old were you when you...
When I got clean, I was 37.
Yeah.
So
I've been through a similar experience. Yeah. And I spent 15 months in a halfway house. And you're right. My experience was it was a beautiful time as well.
Yeah, yeah.
However, that time, you know, was appropriate, but then I had to move on, which you've done.
We did, we did 3 months. 3 months in first stage, which is quite intense, a lot of work, and then second stage, which is supported housing, and you're doing less groups, but you're back out in life again, and how to get on, you know, and I learned a lot of how to cook, how to clean, how to look after myself in treatment.
Right.
That I just didn't do for years, you know. And it's just catapulted me into a new life.
Yeah.
Which is, it is a life beyond my wildest dreams.
The fifth dimension.
It really is.
But Tom, you know, I want you to share a bit about being a sober dad, because you've got a little daughter, haven't you?
Yeah, she's going to be 4 in March.
Oh yeah.
Sophia, the apple of my eye.
Yes.
And I never, in my using, I never thought I'd be a parent. I'd look at friends who were parents or just, you know, strangers who were parents in the street and just thought, it's so far away. I could never be that person.
Yeah.
And I am now. And it's just, it's just a beautiful thing.
Yes.
Being a parent.
It's lovely, And you learn so much, don't you?
About myself.
Yeah.
About,
yeah.
You know, she's just wonderful.
I know, She is a wonderful little girl. And also you've gone back to studying that you left many years ago.
That's right, yeah. I'm doing a degree.
Yes.
At the moment. Yeah, I'm doing...
What's that in, Tom?
A teaching degree.
A teaching degree.
It's called the PG Cert.
Oh, the PG Cert, yeah. So, of course, yeah.
Yeah, doing that. That's a two-year course
degree. In order to teach recording.
Yeah, which I do already.
You do,
I do. I teach music production.
That's right,
Which is great, but it's... it's just nice to go back to school as well, and because I never got a degree.
No.
And it's just another. It's a great thing to be doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's great, and I know your life is full. You do other things, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that about recovery. It's multi-layered, and we can do as many things as we want. Really,
I think it's fantastic, and I think I used to be a little bit embarrassed about doing more than one trade, as it were.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm a sound engineer and a producer, and I still do that.
Yeah.
I teach music production.
Yeah.
But I do building work as well.
You do?
And I do painting and decorating.
That's
and carpentry.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, I was lucky enough to build a recording studio last year.
I've seen it.
So there's an example of the skills coming together.
Sure, yeah.
But you said a great thing. You know, Tom, you're a bit of a journeyman, and I love that.
Yeah.
You know, I suppose we're the gig economy now, where
people are
multi-talented and multi-skilled, and it's okay to do that.
I think it's great to do that.
And for non-addicts and addicts, you know, that's kind of, a lot of people do that in their work life now.
They do. But
you are right about, you know, the recovery. It's going back to the word freedom as well, Jim, that we talked about as children.
Yeah.
What recovery has given me is freedom.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, freedom from my addiction.
Yeah.
But within practicing my recovery allows me to, I've got choices now. And I can try new things.
Yeah.
You know, and I can say yes to you, let's go and record an album, which was a fantastic experience producing your album.
It was,
you
know, wonderful, with you and Edgar and
this project we're doing together with the, for you know, the recovery radio thing we're doing for UK Health Radio.
Yeah,
me producing these shows is great.
It's been just another thing.
It's something I understand on a production level, but also it's the content is relevant. I understand the content. It's brilliant.
And I think it'd be really, really fantastic for you to edit your own show.
It's going to be
your interview, very subjective.
Yeah.
Having just heard your dad's show.
Yeah.
It's a real, you know, that's quite something.
I might ask a friend to edit it. I'm not sure. I'm joking.
It's been fantastic, Tom, listening to your journey in life. And it is a pleasure to know you and count you as a friend. And we're going to play out with your final selection of music, and it's by that wonderful band Steely Dan, isn't it? Do you want to say
absolutely so
what it is?
Steely Dan was a band that my parents played a lot when I was growing up, and I just love their work.
Yeah.
Absolutely love their work. And the track I've chosen is Peg.
First
release on the band's 1977 album Asia, which was a seminal Steely Dan album.
Yeah.
It was released as a single in 77 and reached number 11 in the US. Such a great record, just the musicianship on another level for me.
Yeah.
You know, unbelievable. Michael McDonald's doing backing vocals on it and ad libs at the end. And it's just, again, it's another one of those records. It's just so uplifting for me. Whenever I put it on, you know, I can't help but move and just feel positive. And the power of music for me, you know, in your work today, Jim, you use music in recovery and therapy, and the power of music to me, I love it. You know, I get so much from music, and I'm lucky to be involved in being creative around music, but then also just as a listener, enjoying music.
And
Steely Dan and this record, Peg, just a great example of how powerful a piece of music can be and how it can make one feel, in this case, positive.
Sure. Well, this has been positive, so thanks again, Tom, and here's Steely Dan. Thank you for listening, everyone, and join me next time.
Here's the number of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a fellowship for anyone who has a drinking problem. The number is 0800 917 7650. That's 0800 917 7650. The number of Narcotics Anonymous, this is a fellowship for anyone who has a drug problem. That's from 10 a.m. till midnight. The number is 0300 999 1212. 0300 999 1212. And finally, Al-Anon, which is a fellowship to support family and friends of the alcoholic. It's from 10 a.m. till 10 p.m. The number is 0207 403 0888. That's 0207 403 0888.